Welcome to Scary Stories, the channel that tells you scary stories.
Scary Stories by Peter Bernard.
Bigfoot is a dangerous animal, as told to Peter Bernard, read by P.Q. River. Dear Scary Stories, one of my favorite things about your channel is that you tell the truth about Bigfoot. You don't try to make it seem like it's a big hairy hippie who only wants to love everybody. Bigfoot is an animal, and like any animal, it can kill when it's hungry, or even if it's just scared or angry. Plus, Sasquatch is part human, which means it can be crazy for crazy's sake alone, like serial killers. It combines the worst of the animal world mixed with the worst of the human world, and it's lawless. Do the math. That's not a safe creature to be around or let your kids play around. Bigfoot is not something for people to go wander alone into the forest searching for, as the TV or some so-called scientists would tell you. Searching for Bigfoot should be your last concern if you're in the forest, and your first concern should be if Bigfoot is searching for you. Now, I grew up in northern New York State, up in the famous Whitehall area, and Bigfoot is not a joke to people in my hometown. As you probably know, it's illegal to kill Bigfoot up there. Obviously, that law would not apply if you were to kill the monster in self-defense. Yes, I call it a monster because I know for a fact it will attack humans and their pets. I had to lose a girlfriend to find out, and I'll tell you the story how right now. Back last year, I had been done with high school for a while, so my father made me go out and get a job. Soon, I was working at a certain fast food restaurant chain down on Broadway as a sandwich artist. We were up by the budget motel that had that creepy sign next to it that read, "Save face, buckle up," superimposed over a picture of a smashed windshield. I would have to see it every time I went to work. It really set the tone for the gig. Same thing, over and over. And so, to break the monotony, I had started ending the purchase by saying to the customer, "Save face, buckle up," and then trying not to laugh. And when there were no customers for a while, I would stand there and think to myself, "Save face, buckle up, save face, buckle up." It's like they treat us the same way parents treated bad children in the old days. It used to be like, "Do as your mother tells you or Krampus will disembowel you and eat you for Christmas." Now it's like, "Wear safety belts or we will rip your face off." I loved it so much that I promoted it to the beginning of the conversation. A customer would say, "Hello, I'd like a," and I would greet them with a friendly smile saying, "Save face, buckle up," and chuckle. Most of the job was pretty repetitive, but the traffic that came from the motel was sometimes different. One time, this pretty girl about my age or a little older came in holding a little cat in her arms, looking terrified, and ran over to me. "Save face, buckle up," I stuttered, trying to sound cool, but ending up with my voice cracking at the moment my eyes met hers. She was the most exotic-looking woman I'd ever seen, with light brown skin and eyes that seemed sometimes tan and other times silver, lighter than her skin tone. Her hair, dyed a color that I don't know the name of, was straight and pulled back over her ears, with a black wool hat pulled down low to the eyebrows. She wore a navy blue pea coat over some type of dark pants or leggings, and then combat boots on her feet. As nervous as she seemed, that's how relaxed her small, striped orange cat seemed in her arms. To him, this was obviously all a show for his entertainment. He yawned and stretched and stuck his head into the crook of her arm to go back to sleep. She drew me in close to her and whispered something about how this guy Gunther was going to kill her cat and she needed a place to hide. I, for some reason, did not take her seriously, but I decided to humor her and be nice, then maybe ask her out later. I went into the office and let her in. She begged me to lock the door, so I did. To be honest, I would have eaten the key if she would have asked. I never saw anybody as pretty as her before, and she smelled really nice when you got close to her, too. About 10 or 15 minutes later, I was in the middle of making a sandwich for a store clerk who worked at the lumber place across the highway when this really big guy came in wearing a puffy vest and black leggings with big scary-looking boots that gave off the impression they could detach themselves from his legs and come over and kick you if they felt like it. He had long, light brown, almost blonde hair pulled back in a ponytail, and some kind of weird gray old-fashioned hat on that had a feather in it. He said something to me really loudly, but I didn't understand what he meant. I told him I'd be with him when I was done with this lumber store guy, but the big guy repeated what he said before, and I realized he was asking if a girl came in here. "Oh, a girl," I said. "Sorry, I didn't understand your accent." I turned to the customer who asked me for sweet peppers. "Well, did you see her?" He was really angry, but his German accent cracked me up, and I started doing my Arnold Schwarzenegger imitation. "Where is Sarah Connor? I must find Sarah Connor." I laughed at my Terminator joke, and the lumber guy from across the highway also laughed at my Terminator joke. The giant ponytail Terminator dude, though, he didn't laugh at my Terminator joke. He just looked at me, and then he kept looking at me. Then he took off his sunglasses and, still looking at me, he laid them on the counter between us, and then he continued looking at me. "Look, will you stop looking at me?" I asked him. "It's completely creeping me out." And then, still glaring at me, he picked up his sunglasses, walked toward the door, and stopped, looking back at me again. Then, I kid you not, he said, "I'll be back." And he left, with both me and the lumber guy laughing our asses off. We both made fun of him in his absence, finishing the purchase all in heavy mock German accents. Before leaving to head back to his own store, lumber dude stopped and stared out the large front window. "Hey," he said, looking in the direction the giant guy had gone. "Do you remember what happened next in the Terminator after he said, 'I'll be back'?" Thought about it for a while, and then my stomach sank. "He drove some kind of vehicle into some kind of building or something, didn't he?" I ran around the counter to see what the lumber guy was seeing. At first, I looked around for vehicles, expecting Ponytail Man to do what Arnold did in the movie. But instead, I saw him walking back down the highway from the budget motel, openly holding a gun in his hand. I raced to the office and opened the door. Well, honestly, I tried to open the door, but my hands were so shaky from shock that I had a bit of trouble getting the key in the lock, if you know what I mean. Entering the office and locking the door behind me, I told the girl we had to go and pulled her, still holding her cat, out the back of the building, across the parking lot, and into the trees. Once we were a few trees deep, I wanted to stop, but this time she grabbed me and pulled me. "This is the first place he'll look for us. We've got to keep going for a while," she stage whispered to me in between gasping for air and running through the edge of the forest. Those woods there are really only maybe 12 trees wide, extending in a long line that leads into a wider area and eventually into a huge swath of forest land. I figured if we made it into the forest itself, we'd be hard to find before nightfall, and we might be able to alert law enforcement or something at some point. Mainly, I was watching her butt as I ran behind her, more than planning ahead, to be completely honest. It's not my fault that I've got hormones. That was God's choice. Sooner or later, we had made it to the forest primeval, and I took her to a cave I knew about. Well, a hole in the rock, really. There were bushes in front that we could pull into the cave once inside and create the illusion that there was no cave entrance there at all. We both shone light around from our cell phones, which were getting no reception out there, making sure there was nobody else in there with us. The space inside was really a cavity in the large rock, extending about 30 feet back, about 10 feet high for the most part, with some areas having a taller ceiling and other areas requiring you bend over to pass through. It was warm and dry, but it smelled a little like sweat. "It smells a lot like sweat in here," she whispered to me. "Breathe through your mouth," I suggested quietly. "Pretend the air is good or try not to think about it. As long as we're quiet here, we're safe, and that's the only thing that matters." We settled in close to each other and just sat there, breathing through our mouths and listening. After a while, the fear melted away and was replaced by a zen-like attention. We paid attention to our surroundings. We didn't worry about them. The more we listened, the more we heard, and nothing we heard sounded threatening. She turned to me and placed her arm on my shoulder, sending an excited shiver through my entire body. Leaning close, she whispered directly in my ear something about how we could stay here in the cave until morning. I was too focused on the sensation of warmth from her breath to be listening when she spoke, but I tried not to let it show. I looked her in the eyes and nodded as knowingly as I could. I noticed how the shade of her eyes changed depending on what colors were glowing on our cell phones. I almost mentioned it to her, but decided it wasn't an appropriate moment to be discussing romantic things. Then she leaned in and kissed me. To cut a long story short, we quickly consummated our relationship and laid there afterward, discussing the new life we could start to have in the morning. I knew a number of girls in town who were always looking to rent a room at their places, so it would be easy for her to stay here in town. On the other hand, the only thing I would lose by leaving this place was a minimum wage job, so we discussed whether maybe we should hit the road instead, in a direction other than she knew Gunther planned to be heading in. The world suddenly felt like it was in 4D sensoround, and everything seemed so open to possibility. This, without a doubt, was the happiest moment of my life. We were both a little heated up, and she suggested we go outside and get a breath of fresh air. I was about to ask if that would be safe to do. Then I remembered I was supposed to be the man in this situation. I quickly got dressed and we went outside. She put a baby-carrying thingy on her that I hadn't noticed before, and she put her cat inside it. There was a flat-topped rock about 15 feet in front of the cave, large enough for two people to sit on, just in front of the line of trees we ourselves had emerged from. The light of the moon and stars made it much easier to see outside, so even though we were sitting in the wilderness, in the middle of nowhere, I was completely blissed out and feeling quite at home. It smelled as bad outside as it had inside, but I figured that was probably the smell on our clothes and didn't let it bother me. The grass under my feet may as well have been shag carpeting, and the tree I was leaning against could have been the imitation wood paneling in the Brady Bunch house. That's how safe and comfortable I felt at that moment. Then, a second later, all that was shattered as a large arm came out of the woods and grabbed her around the neck, jerking her backwards. Gunther. She made a squeaking, choking sound, then disappeared into the woods out of my vision. It all happened much more quickly than I could describe it. I raced blindly into the trees, wondering what I would do if I caught up to them. Gunther was 1.5 times my size, and he was armed. Suddenly, ahead, I could see the trees clearing into a field, and that Gunther was already standing in it, facing me, waiting for me. He had my girl over his left shoulder and held his pistol in his right hand pointed at me.
"Come out," he commanded. "Come out or I shoot the girl."
"You don't want to shoot her," I shouted from behind a tree I hope was thick enough to catch a bullet. "You just spent the day tracking her. You're not going to shoot her."
"Oh, yeah?"
this ponytail muscle freak asked me.
"Watch this."
He grabbed her by the hair, which caused her to shout in pain and wake up, realizing her situation. He dropped her to the ground, and her kitten popped out of her baby carrier and began grooming himself. Gunther laughed.
"Even better idea,"
he exclaimed as he picked up the kitten and held the gun to its little head. The kitten rubbed its face against the gun nozzle innocently. Both the girl and I were quietly and politely asking Gunther to please not kill the little cat when suddenly something happened to make Gunther lose all face entirely. A large, hairy hand reached out from behind Gunther and just took his face off him. I don't know how else to explain it to you. The head was still there, but it was all red and gushy. The kitten jumped away at the spatter of blood. The girl grabbed the cat, and all three of us backed up to the tree line to avoid getting splattered. Then Gunther slumped and collapsed forward, landing on what used to be his face. All I could think of was the billboard. "Save face, buckle up," I said. The girl gave me a dirty look. "Gunther didn't buckle up," I told her, and she looked at me like I was crazy, making childish jokes during tragedy. Is that a sign of going into shock or something? It always seemed cool when the X-Men did it in comic books. Then Gunther's murderer stepped forward out of the tree, standing on the corpse and glaring at us. This is the part of the story you're all waiting for. This was Bigfoot, or if it wasn't, then I don't know what it was. He was like the Patty creature from the Bob Gimlin film on TV, but he was a lot taller, darker, more muscular, and for lack of a better word, he was twitchier. He kept looking around him in an almost paranoid way, as though he were the one under attack and not us. I never saw anyone or anything so agitated. He reminded me of this druggie I once saw tweaking and throwing a garbage can randomly at people walking by. I contemplated trying to escape, but this twitching beast would have been on me before I could have even turned around. I remember thinking, this is why so few report Bigfoot. He probably eats most of the people who see him. I started wishing I had told my mom that I loved her when I spoke to her on the phone that morning. I was remembering things from my childhood that I wished I could have done differently. I was thinking how much a better person I could have been and wondered if reincarnation was real. The creature hooted and pounded his left fist on his chest, and I was brought instantly back to the current moment. Time slowed and I studied this monster in front of me. I asked myself, why are you trying to commit his appearance to memory? You're going to be dead in a minute. And then I answered I would be able to tell the angels what Bigfoot looked like. And what he looked like was messed up. He had hair or fur all over, and there were patches of it missing and other patches where it looked like it was matted down, where his skin showed he had sores, cuts, and bruises. This Bigfoot was in bad need of a grooming. He smelled just like our little cave, only much more so, and I realized we probably made love in Bigfoot's home, or one of them. He reared back to full height, and it was utterly breathtaking. He was much taller than any bear. I'm not a good judge of height, but to me, at that moment, he might as well have been 40 feet tall. That's how insignificant I felt at close range to him. Then, in a terrifying, twitchy nightmare of a moment, he bent forward and roared a scream out that was so powerful I could practically see it, and I know I could smell it. That was the last thing I remembered until a bird crapped on my face, waking me up the next morning. While wiping my cheek with some napkins I had stolen from work, I looked around and saw the girl and the cat were both sitting there, facing away from me. I looked to where they seemed to be staring and saw nothing but the sunrise coming through the trees. I got up and found my legs a little wobbly, but eventually I made it over to the two of them, and I saw that the girl was meditating. I decided not to disturb her and sat down next to her. Then a breeze brought a terrible odor, and I quickly looked to my left, seeing Gunther's corpse rotting on the grass. This panicked me, and I stood up, turning in circles, wondering if the creature was still there. "He's gone," the girl said flatly. "Hmm?" I said dumbly. "The ape man," she explained, as if to a school kid. "He's gone." "How do you know for sure?" I asked timidly. She tapped her nose and wiggled it, like Samantha from Bewitched. "Women can smell better than men can. I'll know when he's headed back in this direction, which might be soon. If you're ready, we should head back to town. I marked down the GPS coordinates so that we can tell the cops. Wait, I interrupted her. Tell the cops what? That a mythical creature killed your Nazi ex-lover? As your new boyfriend, I'd be the main suspect. I'd spend the rest of my life in prison for a murder that I couldn't possibly have committed. Well then, she asked me in a challenging way, what do you propose to do? I told her, I propose we choose one of the plans we discussed last night and start our new life together. That's what I propose. I mean, what do you propose to do about Gunther? She was becoming increasingly annoyed at me, I could see. Why do we have to do anything about Gunther? I asked. Let nature take its course, and let us take a course back to my apartment so we can both shower. I'll spare you the lecture she gave me at that point, mainly because she used extra-long $30 words that I never heard before, and I couldn't repeat what she said if I wanted to, which I don't. Long story short, she judged me a coward. She agreed not to report what happened to the authorities, but she no longer wanted to be my girlfriend. I argued indignantly that I was being punished for what Bigfoot did and that I hadn't hurt anybody. She gave me a weird look and asked angrily, "Didn't you?" We walked together back through the woods to her motel. Then I never saw her or the cat again. I resigned from the sandwich shop via email and left later the same day on a cross-country trek as I had planned with my girl, only now I'd be going alone. I figured the less I was around for police to question, the less chance I'd say something stupid and get myself in trouble. No doubt there were tons of my and the girl's footprints all over that forest. I was pretty sure we didn't leave any belongings in the cave, but the cops can be pretty smart when they want to track you down. It seemed to me that it might be best for me to never discuss this incident ever again. The reason I made an exception for you people reading or listening to this out there is as a public service message. Beware of Bigfoot. There are all kinds of ways he can destroy your life. He's not a big, lovable teddy bear like on the Larry Henderson show or whatever. He's a monster. He can kill you without even meaning to. Don't listen to numbskulls telling you he's a peaceful woodland creature or anything like that. 9 times out of 10, if you come across a bear, it'll be peaceful towards you. That doesn't mean bears are safe to be around. You can encounter a wild boar and get away without getting gored, but that doesn't mean the boar is your friend and it's a man of peace. It just means you got lucky. You can listen to me and learn, or you can listen to the self-proclaimed cryptozoologists and go traipsing into the woods, knocking on trees and inviting danger and death to come get you. It's your choice. Choose wisely. Whichever you do, Bigfoot will always be there, just waiting for you to make a mistake. Save face, people. Buckle up.
Come back for more scary stories.